This episode of the Mickey Mouse Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. It doesn't matter where you're going, it doesn't matter when you're going, it doesn't matter who's going, but what it does matter is saving the time, the effort, the stress, and money when you plan your vacations. This is why we want you to go visit the vacation planners at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. Let them show you how a real professional vacation planner does his or her job. So visit them at mei-travel.com, mousefantravel.com, or click on their banner at mickeymilespodcast.com.
Hi, it's Andy Jackson from Riverview, Florida, and I love listening to Mike and Michelle on the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 148. Of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WW Today, and with me on the show, as always, is my lovely co-host, Michelle Scribner-McLean. Michelle, I have a feeling you've got a lot of things to say before we get the show on the road.
I do. I do have a lot of things to say. The first thing I have to say is, how are you, Mike? Getting
I'm
ready
okay.
for Princess?
And I believe that we just finished the we're getting ready to do the 5K tomorrow, right?
That's right. Going to the expo today.
Going to the expo
yeah.
today. That's right.
Because everybody knows where we record these shows 5 minutes before we before we release them, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So I survived my underwear run and got to run in Fenway Park. And not only did I get to do that, but it was also a blizzard too. So raised the whole group of us raised $200,000 for a great cause. So very fun, very fun. Would you like to run in your underwear through Fenway Park?
Especially in February, yeah.
It was fun. And the bleacher seats were wicked cheap. So I have a few announcements and then a shout out. The first announcement is that I want to remind everybody, this is kind of last minute, but that we are going to have a meetup on February 22nd, which is Saturday, and it's going to be at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is, Mike, you chose the location, the Boardwalk Bakery, outside the Boardwalk Bakery. Did you have your eyes on something in there? Is that why you chose that location?
No, I just figured that didn't want to have to force anyone to use an admission to a park and did not want to do it again at the Solarium because I just worried about the numbers. They're getting really big. So I thought we'd try something different. And I think that now on we'll always try to find a different spot that would be good for everybody.
Well, I'm definitely going to get some sort of treat. I can't be outside this wonderful bakery and not get something. So hope to see you there. Actually, I think this is going to be a little bit of a smaller meet, Mike. There are about 25 people who have RSVP'd. I also wanted to do some shameless, I don't know if it's self-promoting. I am fundraising for a good cause. And with the help of Michael Miller now, I have, he helped me set up an Etsy store for Boston Marathon magnets. So if you're interested in buying one, you can go to Etsy.com and, or Etsy, and look for Boston magnets. I'll have our show notes guy put the link in the show notes. It's really cool. For $10, you can get a Boston Strong magnet, or you can get a 26.2 of the Boston Skyline. And 100% of the proceeds are going to Spalding Rehab for my Boston Marathon run. So I was talking to a buddy of mine who works for the FBI in Boston, and he said it's going to be very highly secure type of race this time, as you might imagine. So, and I'm sure I'm very emotional, but I hope you will consider supporting. And if you already have donated, thank you so much. A lot of our listeners have donated, been very, very generous. And if you would like a magnet, just send me a note at michelle@mickeymilespodcast.com, and I will send you out a magnet. And the last thing I want to say, Mike, is I have a shout-out for Jennifer Taylor and Bill Taylor, who posted a really cool picture of themselves after they had finished their first five-mile run. And they weren't able to run that not too long ago, and they're very proud and excited, and they're gearing up for their first 10K in June. So Jennifer and Bill, congratulations. Love to see pictures of people getting out there, getting fit. And you look so happy in your picture. So congratulations.
And with each one of those pictures comes a story. And the story, the story of today's podcast is questions and answers. So we're going to start off with Michelle, as always, reading the very first question from, and very appropriately named during this winter, Rick Freeze.
Yeah, I think that people from southern states are getting tired of us whining about all the snow. So Rick Freeze says, I'm catching up on the Q&A episodes, and I've heard a few comments about the Castaway Key 5K. From listening to Mike, it is obvious that he is not a fan. Are you not a fan, Mike?
Rick is very, very astute in his observation. Rick, I am not a fan, capital N-A-F,
it's
not a fan.
It's so hard to tell when you're not a fan of something.
I know.
I went on my first Disney Cruise Line cruise over spring break 2013 and finished my very first 5K on Castaway Key. So when I was looking into the Castaway Key 5K, I learned that this event has been going on for a good number of years, but it was run by the cruise line and had no affiliation with Run Disney. It has just recently become an official Run Disney event. This could account for the quote-unquote issues that Mike has had with the organization of the race. I don't know if it's you, because you've never done that race, but maybe some listeners. I look forward to my second Castaway Key 5K in September 2014 before I run my first real Disney race at the Tower of Terror 10-miler. As well as the 5K in the morning. Keep up the great podcast, and I look forward to running into you guys this October at the Tower of Terror 10-miler. So, interesting. So now it's an official Run Disney event. I wonder if you have to sign up with active.com or if you can still go to the Navigator and sign up right on the ship.
Yeah, you know, Eric said I'm not a fan. I think that anytime you see a race that is loosely run, it kind of bothers. It should bother you. It should bother me. You know, you don't know how careful they were about the run organization. Race director was careful about safety and all that. So I always worry about that. But, you know, Rick, the other thing is that in general, I'm not a big fan of 5Ks anyways. So I think that's part of my baggage. But thank you for letting us know about all that stuff. And we look forward to seeing you at the Tower of Terror.
And I am a big fan of 5Ks. I have been on three Disney cruises. I'm just not sure. I mean, there's a big difference between the 5K on Castaway Key where, you know, you're running on the bike path and everything like that. It's beautiful, but I think I'd want to spend my time on the beach because I don't get to go to the beach enough. So I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we've been spoiled. I mean, the 5Ks that we have run for the Run Disney events on both coasts, it's a little bit very much more organized, and it's a big deal. And this is not as big of a deal, and maybe that's what's the issue. But anyways.
It's clearly a big deal to Rick, and I don't know. I don't know that I would do it, but it seems like a different race than the other 5Ks.
My next question comes from Randy Crane, who says, hi, Mike and Michelle. I know it's real early, but I'm thinking ahead to my training plan for Dumbo this year, and I have a question. When my brother-in-law and I were training for Tink, our longest run was 15 miles and currently have a half marathon pace of about 12 and a half to 13 minutes per mile. As I think ahead to our last long run when training for Dumbo, I have an idea. Here it is. For that run, instead of having a specific distance in mind, I'd like to set as our goal for that run as far as we can go until A, it gets dark, or B, our pace gets slower than 15 minutes per mile. That may be 14 or 15 miles. It may be 20 miles. I have no idea. So how crazy and terrible is this plan? Thanks for your thoughts. Michelle, you first.
Well, it's interesting, Randy. I think it's wonderful to have goals, you know, different ideas for your training plan. But I guess that's what I was going to say is, what is your goal in doing this? I think whenever you add something new to your training plan, it has to be working towards a specific goal, whether it's merely to keep your fitness up or to get faster or to go a little bit longer. The danger in doing 20 miles when you're not running for, you know, if you're increasing that much more and you're not, you haven't incrementally increased, you could injure yourself. You could find yourself 17 miles out and with an injury, and I don't know how you get back. There are a lot of, I think training is more than the running. You're thinking of the nutrition, and there are a lot of things that happen after the 13 miles that you don't consider. Training for a longer than 13-mile run, you have a lot of other nutrition issues, cramps, things like that. So I'd be very careful to think about what is your goal. It looks like you want to keep a consistent pace and that you're able to do that. So I think I would just stick with what you're doing, unless you're moving up towards a marathon, and I would do it in a very systematic, careful way with a plan. I don't think I would do it. Mike?
Michelle, you gave a great answer. I think that when I think of training for any type of race, even though I may have been doing that race, I may have done that race 20 times, I'm always trying to figure out how best to train for that race. And by training, it's more than just running. It's figuring out what kind of nutrition, how often to take your gel, how often to drink, your pace, what you have to do prior to the race, how you pace yourself, how you finish off the race, how you do a recovery. There are so many things. That if Randy, if you would like to, you know, go further, then take Michelle's advice, gradually build up the miles. If you want to go out and run 15 or 20 miles for your training for Dumbo, that's fine. Just don't overdo it. Take your time. It's always good to test to see how far you've gone, but you have to keep in mind that training is just not running as far as you can or as fast as you can. It's trying to figure out what your body needs during the run, before the run, during the run, and after the run. So, you know, it's not a crazy or terrible plan. I just want you to be very careful. Michelle?
I think that goal thing is just really important, too. You have to be very clear on what is your goal in doing this. So that's what I would say. All right, our next question is from Carrie Rotner Callahan, and she says, if you are doing the coast-to-coast, do you have to check the coast-to-coast on both registrations? For example, if you ran the race at the beginning of the year without the intention of doing the coast-to-coast and then realize that you can do a second race on the opposite coast at the end of the year, are you eligible to check the coast-to-coast on the second registration? Great question. Mike?
The answer is, Carrie, is that when you register for the second race, that's when you click on that coast-to-coast
I agree.
Box or whatever. So you don't worry, because a lot of people don't know if they can do coast-to-coast after, you know, when they sign up for that first, that initial race. So once you've got that one race under your belt and you're thinking, you know, why not? Then you click on it.
Yep, I agree with that 100%.
Our next question comes from, let me see if I can get the
Come
pronunciation.
Come on, you can do it. We got to do this for him.
Steve Cantafio.
Yay!
And he's talking about the Ragnar races. He says, I'm not sure if you want to talk about this on the Mickey Mouse podcast or not, but I'm very interested in thinking others may be too. Can you talk about these Ragnar races? You did the one in New Hampshire, right? How exactly do they work? And as a team event, does everyone pile in a van that rides next to the person currently running? How do the logistics work? I saw some Team All Ears members just do one in the Florida Keys. That seemed like a lot of fun. All right, Michelle, you are the Ragnar race expert.
I don't know if I'm an expert. I have one under my belt, but so we have to say that Steve Cantafio, Mike and I found out we were pronouncing his name incorrectly for like the past 3 years. So that's why we're going to keep on saying Cantafio. So I did the Reach to Beach, which was from the White Mountains of New Hampshire to Hampton Beach. And it was just actually bought by Ragnar. And they're distances of, you know, 150, 200 miles. Mine was 203 miles. And the way that it works is that there are teams. I'm sure some of them work differently. I'll tell you the way that mine work. There are teams of 12. There are two vans of six people each. Everybody's assigned a running number. So in the order in which you run, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way up through 12. And then the course, the leg of the race is rated in terms of difficulty and the length of the course. So you might have a longer run with fewer hills, or you might have a shorter run with more hills, or you may have both. And then van number one, which is runners 1 through 6, runner one runs, and then there's a transition to runner two, and the van actually follows the people, and you go straight through until you get to your destination. So you're running 24 hours. So you're running in the middle of the night. When the last runner runs, number six, van number two takes over, 7 through 12 go, and van number one has a break to go get dinner, to rest or something like that, and they are constantly in contact with each other. So you don't actually see the other van very much until the end when everybody is at the end. So that's how it works. And we know that some of our buddies, Carrie and Dan and Tim, did the one in the Florida Keys, which sounds fantastic to me. I don't know if that's something that you could do in Walt Disney World. It's just not that big of a space. But there could be, 300, 400 vans at these different transition areas, too. And the transition areas are schools, churches, places like that along the way. You have to be highly organized. You can't have a lot of stuff in the van, so you have to be very clear on what you're taking and what you're not taking. We had these little bins that only fit a pair of sneakers and a few changes and some of our food and things like that. So it's quite the thing. And I spent 90% of my first one saying I wasn't going to do it again, but I think I might be thinking of it. It's very tough, very tough. Mike, would you ever do one?
I never like to say no, but I guess it would depend upon where it was. It would depend upon what time of year, and it would depend upon who my team would be. If all those meet with my approval, then I think I'd probably do it. But I think that's big. That's the big. From what I've heard from everyone, it's usually one of those, or usually two of those three, that really convinces someone to do it. But I'd love to have all. If all three were intact, I'd say, yeah, that would be fun.
The amount of running wasn't that much. I think I ran maybe a total of 18 miles for my three legs, so it wasn't that much. I mean, over 24 hours. So. But there are other factors involved. And I think just the unknown was really – now that I understand how it goes, I think I'd be much more comfortable. And I'd love to run with Carrie, Tim, and Dan on the Florida Keys. That sounds like a blast. So,
I remember you saying the most difficult part of those races was trying to figure out how and when to refuel.
Yes, because you never knew exactly. Well, you kind of knew when you were going to start to run, but then you were waiting out there for the other runner. The other thing, too, Mike, was the safety piece of it. And I know I talked about this a little bit, but you had to. They were very strict, as they should be, on the reflection, the blinky lights that you had. They checked to make sure that you had a vest. And so running with all that extra stuff and your nutrition. And it was, I didn't run too much during the night, but it was really interesting following runners and 2 o'clock in the morning in the hills of New Hampshire. So it's a different experience. All right. Our next question is from Susan Waters from North Berwick, Maine. And she had an interesting note. She said, "Hi, Mike and Michelle. I purchased a pair of Hokas after learning about them from Eddie McCoy on your podcast. I love them and I love to tell people about them. On a recent episode, Mike Wardian talked about wearing Hoka 1-1s. This prompted me to ask the company, what is the correct pronunciation of their name? I thought you might be interested in the response since I know Michelle wears them too." And they said to her, "Dear Susan, thank you for contacting us. Hoka One One is a Maori phrase which translates into time to fly. It is generally how our company name is pronounced. However, Hoka 1-1 is also a pronunciation used within the U.S. So, Mike, I'd only heard them, I think, from Eddie and other people called One One. And Mike Wardian, I noticed that, too. He was calling them 1-1. So that's interesting. Yeah. Thank you, Susan, for letting us know.
So how are you One One 1-1s?
I don't wear them for running anymore. I went back to my Asics. I wear them for just bumming around because I noticed some knee issues. So you're going to say I told you so?
No, I don't have to. I think your body is saying Mike told you so.
I'm glad I tried them though. They are very comfortable. They're just not for me for running. I would definitely wear them for a 5K, but long term, when I get up more than 8 miles, I noticed my knees were aching, which is something I never had happen before. So
I think that they probably work best with those people who have wide feet. I really think that for some reason that seems to – everyone who I know who uses them, most of those people have wide feet, and they've mentioned that. So maybe that's the key.
Well, we have a buddy who's got flat feet who wears them and swears by them. We have another friend who has shin splints? I can't remember. Maybe – no. What else, what is it? I can't remember what she has, but she has another foot issue, and she swears by them. So.
Oh, well, plantar, that's it.
Yeah,
that might be. Could they really cushiony? They're really cushiony.
Yeah, so everybody's got to find what works for them. It didn't work for me.
Our next question comes from Brandy Esposito, and she says, "Hi, Mike and Michelle. Rich, you didn't hear that. Hi, Brandy Esposito." Our next question comes from Brandy Esposito, who says, "Hi, Mike and Michelle. I am writing today to ask a question as a new runner. I have never been a runner and at the age of 30 decided to take it on as a hobby. My longest distance has been around 3 miles and pace is not horrible, around 11 minutes per mile. My problem is that recently I have been getting very bad shin splints. I have my sights set on the Tara Tara 10 miler, but not sure I can get past the injury. I even practiced when we were in there last month, running from Norway to Morocco, and just that little distance seemed to aggravate it. My husband says you have to just condition your shins and run through the pain to overcome it. What are your thoughts?" As far as shin splints go, Michelle, from what I recall, Michelle, would you like to try this?
Sure. Well, I actually don't know anything about shin splints. I'll say that right off the bat. But I do know that I took a class in Qi running, and one of the big takeaway messages that I got from that is that when something hurts, you shouldn't run through it, that you should stop what you're doing, kind of reexamine your position, and don't push through it. And when I did e-coaching with Jeff Galloway, he told me the same thing. So I wouldn't. The idea of running through pain really worries me. And again, I don't know anything at all about shin splints, but that's my two cents about that.
If you talked to about two or three experts, they would all give you somewhat similar answers as to why shin splints occur. Most of them will point to something that's pretty obvious, and that is anytime you deal with overuse of any part of your body, you're going to risk having pain. Shin splints usually are pretty common among runners, and they usually start showing up when you're ramping up your workout intensity. I don't know if Brandy, you're trying to run faster. It seems like you're not running that long of a distance, so it may be some other things. Sometimes if you train on one type of surface and then you go to another surface, let's say you're training on asphalt and then you're training on concrete, sometimes that will impact your legs and you might get shin splints. Sometimes it's a case of small stress fractures in your legs, again being overuse being the culprit there, and then you need to figure out what to do with that, or it could be something to do with your feet. If you have flat feet, if you're over pronating, there's a whole bunch of things. One of the things that you may want to do, Brandy, is go see a podiatrist, and the podiatrist can take a look at your feet and see if there's maybe something that he can prescribe, maybe arch supports or things like that. You have to think about resting. You need to think about maybe icing your shin after workout. And more importantly, I'd say go see your doctor. This is a common ailment, but if it keeps it, it sounds like this, there may be something more, because if you just ran from Norway to Mexico and it hurt, then there might be something there. So my strong suggestion would to have a professional podiatrist.
But don't push take a look the at pain. It. Don't push through the pain, right?
Oh, no. No. No.
Okay, that's it.
That's it for our questions. All right. So I believe that's it. And Michelle, I guess it's time to get ready for the old 5K. I don't think we've ever run this 5K before.
No, this is going to be a new one for us. And we're doing the glass slipper challenge. So, Mike, I'm interested to see what your glass slippers are going to look like.
And for those of you who are and, you know, I'm going to make a little announcement. Well, I'm actually announcing it. I announced it on Tuesday, too. That is, for those of you who are friends of mine on Facebook, you may have noticed I've changed my profile photo. And there's a photo of me running out of the castle. and I've got my hands up in the air, whatever. That was my very first half marathon with Run Disney. And that was taken, I think it was taken almost 10 years ago. And that shirt is 10 years old, and I'm going to be wearing that for the 5K. I dug it out of the mothballs.
Oh, boy, that's going to smell good.
Yep. It's an old 5K shirt, but I'm wearing that for 5K. Anyways, that's my announcement. Any last words, Michelle?
No, I'm going to not be wearing a 5-year-old's shirt. That's all I have to say about it.
2005. I guess, it's 9 years old.
Okay. I'm not going to be wearing a nine-year-old shirt to run. And I guess my big announcement is I'm probably not going to be buying anything at the expo. But Mike says I'm wrong.
We'll be reporting on that later.
So all right. I can't wait to see all of our friends at Princess. Excited.
So far, Michelle Scribner-McLean. This is Mike Scopa. And we'll see you in Orlando.
This episode of the Mickey Mouse Podcast has been brought to you by the Vacation Planners at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. They know how to cross those T's, dot those I's. They know all the secrets. They know all the shortcuts. They know how to take the worry out of any vacation planning. It doesn't matter where you're going. Be it a Disney destination or any destination, they can do the job for you. So give them a shot. Give them a chance. Give them a call. Go to MEI-travel.com. MouseFanTravel.com, or click on their banner at MickeyMilesPodcast.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at Facebook.com/MickeyMilesPodcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at Twitter.com/MickeyMilesPod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gray saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.